Hannah, if we can, if we could resume from where we left off last time, and I'll ask you a leading question with your permission. You were with the Continental Exterior Styling section for 2 years, almost 2 years, and you offered to give us a thumbnail sketch of how the division got started, and specifically the breaking in and the educating of William Clay Ford, at that time a young vice president on the staff, and this was to be his maiden flight in a sense, was it not, with the company?
Whether or not he was vice president, soon become.
Soon to become. The first reference to it was one evening, as we were sitting down for dinner, Harley Kopp said, you know what you guys are really here for?
It was about 1953.
Someplace in that area.
Uh-huh.
And we thought it was to create new products for the Ford Motor Company.
Which was you were in the special products group.
Which is the special products division.
Yeah.
And Harley says, yeah, that's part of it, but also he says, we're here to break William Clay into the automotive business.
Mm-hmm.
And he says he'll be asking you a lot of questions and give him straight answers.
Mm-hmm.
And it was quite an experience because Bill's office was right next to the gym that we were in. You know, we were out in
the old trade
cornfield in the trade school.
Yeah, right across where the
power plant
is.
Yeah.
But just behind where the world headquarters.
Yes.
That.
It was in the middle of that area.
Yeah.
And Bill was very interested in automobiles at that time.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a lot of fun because he would stop at my desk and ask, what the hell are you really doing?
And he was very candid about that. He was candid about his lack of knowledge.
Right.
Yeah, that's good.
And would say, well, we're going to change this rear quarter panel or rocker or cowl panel or windshield header, and
mm-hmm.
He'd say, now wait a minute, what the hell is that? All right. So with each day that passed, Bill hardly missed a day to come in and go through the studio and see what the heck we were really doing.
Mm-hmm.
Johnny Reinhart and Harley Kopp had a tremendous rapport with Bill.
C-O-P-P?
Harley Kopp?
Yeah.
Who is the tormentor of Ford Motor Company.
But at that time, as you say, had a marvelous rapport.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Right.
He depended on Harley, I think, for a lot of mechanical, technical knowledge that he does.
Well, Harley was the chief engineer, you know. In fact, the whole division rotated around her.
Mm-hmm.
Harley Kopp.
This is the Continental Division.
Right. Very strong man.
Mm-hmm.
At that time, I found him extremely likable.
Mm-hmm.
So was Bill, and so was John. It was really a pleasure to work in that area.
By tormentor, you mean that he has since been involved in adversarial litigation
against
the company. Yeah.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
It's too bad.
Yeah.
Too, really.
Yeah.
Because well, you saw the relationship grow throughout the year, for the short period that we were there. And I think it was just a case of Harley Kopp getting too close to Bill Ford.
Mm-hmm.
Just a little bit too close. Like I remember one morning, Bill Ford came in around 10 o'clock, and Harley, I think, jokingly said, "What the hell, can't you get here at 8 o'clock in the morning?" And I don't think that went over too well with Bill.
Uh-huh.
Like all love relationships or friend relationships,
mm-hmm.
I think that sometimes you just go too far because you think you're too close.
Mm-hmm.
But I really believe that Hurley just went too far. Mm-hmm. And he would say other things like that.
He would presume on their relationship.
Right.
Of course, Bill, or William Clay, had some reason to feel sensitive on this score. I think others had pointed out to him that he was often not very punctual.
Well, be that as it may.
You're not
going
to comment.
I wouldn't comment.
Okay. Yeah.
It was a very nice relationship. And really, Bill stayed interested in the automobiles until the very demise of Continental, I guess.
What was your function there?
Exterior designer.
Mm-hmm. And John Reinhart was the...
And John Reinhart was the exec.
Exactly.
I don't really know what... I don't even recall what we call him. No. Chief stylist in those
Chief
days,
stylist,
I think.
Yeah, right, yeah.
Probably Johnny's got it on his tape.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
But, Bob Thomas was there, Ray Smith. Fred Beamish was the interior designer.
B-E-A-M-I-S-H?
H, mm-hmm. Yeah. He's still around.
Is he?
I think he's out in Arizona, but I really don't. I'll make a good trip for you, Dave.
Yeah.
I'll go out and interview.
Look him up.
All right. The basic design for the Continental Mark II was a combination of Fred's design and my design.
Fred Beamish?
Right.
Really?
And I think Fred really should get more credit than I do.
How'd that come about?
In designing the Mark II, first of all, I guess Bill and Johnny and Harley decided on a contest.
Competition?
Competition,
mm-hmm.
Which I'm sure you're aware of. Or
well,
you're
no,
not
no,
aware
give
of.
Give some details, yeah.
Well, Bill wanted other inputs into the Continental Mark II design.
Other than what you and Fred and,
right.
and Johnny come up with. Huh?
I guess in selling it to the company,
mm-hmm.
that they wanted to cover.
Had that been the standard procedure for a new product, a competition?
They
did it for the 49 Ford, I think.
Really, like Walker and Company was
That's
hired
right.
from the outside.
Yeah, right, yeah.
And,
to compete with Gregory's design.
Right. So, names were put into to Bill and Harley as competent designers that they could contribute to the Mark II program,
mm-hmm.
Which I think there were six. Walker was given a whack at it.
He was still there, of course. Yeah.
Of course, he was over at the main design. Wasn't North American then, it was just Ford Motor Company.
Mm-hmm.
Then Bus Grissinger, who was in business with another fellow at the time. I forget that particular
outside outfit. The company?
Outside the company.
Oh.
Yeah, he had started his own business.
Mm.
I think it was Grissinger and Miller or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And there was another fellow out in I believe Wisconsin. I'd have to look through my notes
sure.
and get their
right.
names out.
Yeah.
But anyways, we devised a grid for a perspective that the vehicles would be illustrated on. There's a side view, a front view, three-quarter front and a three-quarter rear view.
Mm-hmm.
And I think a rear view as well as a front view. And we worked quite a while on getting that together. Then these grids were passed out with somewhat of a page of assumptions what the car should be.
Mm-hmm.
And then these designers went off and they were given a time period to complete their designs and bring them in, and we had quite a huge show right there on the gymnasium, which was our studio at the time.
Was
and I don't really recall the date.
Mm-hmm.
Gordon Buick was there at that
was
time.
Was he on site at that time?
Yeah, Gordon was working as the body engineer, if
right.
I remember correctly.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, Gordon was always a body engineer. He wasn't any fantastic designer.
No.
He claims to have designed everything.
I know.
That's terrible. No, I love the guy.
Well,
I really
he was very
do.
Unhappy with the fact that he was relegated to Continental because he felt that something
was true. Yeah, really. And he figured us young whippersnappers were going to do him in, I guess.
Yeah. Charlie, I'm sorry we got no smoking room here.
Oh, okay.
Forgive me. But could you come
Can I go to the bathroom?
Yeah. Okay, before the interruption, we were talking about your experiences at the soon-to-be Continental Division.
Right.
By the way, I think we ought to... ask you, ask an authority as to just when was it decided that it would be called the Mark II?
I was looking through my notes trying to pick that up, really. I really was.
Yeah.
And the only thing that I can recall, I recall drawing the numerals too.
The Roman numerals. Huh?
Right. And attaching it to a spear that came off of the ornament, and that was going to be on the side of the body.
Mm-hmm.
But I can't really pin it down. I could go back through my notes and
mm-hmm.
perhaps get some dates. In fact, the notes I had today had dates on them.
Mm.
And the hood ornament, it was well after the hood ornament was done, I think.
The one, the knight's head and the...
Right, the knight's head and the cross
mm-hmm.
and the... Oh, yeah, we were going to talk about the crest.
The crest, okay.
The crest.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That was one of the jobs that Harley came in with. At that time, I think it was that period that we finalized the body and we were going to ornament the thing. And we were kicking around hood ornament or no hood ornament.
Mm-hmm.
Or a new ornament. And it was either Johnny or Harley gave me the dissertation that the Ford Motor Company wanted a new Lincoln crest because the old crest had a Christian cross on it. And that the ethnic groups, such as the Jewish people, would not buy the Lincoln with that Christian cross on there. So we had to come up with a new design. And Bob Thomas, as I recall, did one over a weekend. It was very similar to what is there. I did the final one, but it no longer ended up with the little knight's head in the center of the north, east, south
yeah, right.
segments of the ornament. And then, of course, there were three lions on the crest, and I was sent to the library by Johnny to get a book on heraldry.
Right.
So that we wouldn't come up with a Bar Dexter or Bark Sinister.
Right.
And at the time, I didn't know what the hell that was.
Yeah, you found out very quickly. Yeah.
But
that means a bastard part
right.
of the line. Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. Bastard part.
Yeah.
Or the legitimate part. So, after the thing was rendered up and I was working on the crest, after Bob Thomas's initial overall design of that crest, and it really was his, the initial one,
mm-hmm.
and I was rendering it up on my desk, and Bill Ford came up behind me and said, "What the hell are you guys doing?" So I showed him what we were doing. And Johnny came up behind Bill.
Reinhardt.
Johnny Reinhardt. And Bill was saying, "Well, what's it all mean?" And Johnny says, "Well, you see the three lions." And Bill says, "Yeah."
Were they Revens or Regardin?
Regardin.
Okay.
And Johnny said, "That's the three Ford brothers." And Bill looked over and saw the berries, and he says, "What are the berries for?" And Johnny said, "They're the berries."
I can see why.
I'll never forget that.
I can see why William Clay liked Reinhardt.
That's all the explanation he needed.
Oh, that's marvelous. So it stayed.
So it stayed.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it really didn't stay because they left. The Lions got out of it.
Yeah, right.
And we opened up the Crest and made a hood ornament out of it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Which is in the spirit of the Mercedes ornament, you mm-hmm. know.
Actually, the three Lions were I think, grabbed up by Ford Division about 3 or 4 years later.
I don't recall,
yeah,
you know. I really don't recall. But as I recall, the Ford Crest always had lions.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know if anybody else got that type of explanation. Where were we, Dave?
You were talking about doing the Lincoln Crest, how it evolved and what was the final result.
Well, going through my notes, I noticed that at first Bill didn't want a hood ornament at all.
Mm-hmm.
And of course we hadn't established what the crest would be yet, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I do recall us sketching a number of things for hood ornaments,
mm-hmm.
or an ornament for the vehicle. But when we came up with the, you know, the cardinal points of the compass, north, east, south, and west, and then putting the rectangular ring around it, which was similar to Bob Thomas's sketch of it,
mm-hmm.
that if I recall, he did it on one weekend. We refined it, took the roundels out and the lions out, and I made a shop drawing, and if I remember correctly, Johnny Crucial was one of the modelers, and
I suppose that's it.
I think it's K-R-U-S-H-S-C-H-I-L.
Crucial.
L-E, I think it was.
Mm-hmm.
He got a hunk of aluminum and of Durell.
Durell.
And we transferred it onto the Durell and immediately started cutting it out. There was only one wood model made of it before that that Johnny had made.
Really?
But it was so delicate because the frame was only about a tenth of an inch thick, as I remember.
Mm-hmm.
There was a two-tenths. Probably two-tenths of an inch thick. But it was so thin we couldn't hold it together any other way, so Johnny said, I'll make it out of metal. We were delighted.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe he worked about a week on it. Filed that out of Durell, polished it. And when Bill saw it, he fell in love with it.
Uh-huh. Can you describe in audio terms its shape and form?
Well, it has cardinal points of the compass on it. It's northeast, south, and west.
Mm-hmm.
And the boxes, or the inner frame, really, are only there, I guess, to make it distinctive. We felt as though it was distinctive. We wanted the same mystique as a Mercedes,
mm-hmm.
and to create our own mark,
mm-hmm.
which I believe it we did accomplish.
Mm-hmm. Yes, you did.
Yeah. It was a unique ornament, and in that particular era, it was made out of what they call an investment casting.
Vestment?
That's what they called it. It was a process of doing it, I
uh-huh.
guess.
Uh-huh.
And to get the most detail in a material that wasn't too ductile, that wouldn't bend.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, at that time, you know, we didn't have spring ornaments. They were out there, and I guess it was quite a lethal thing they have out there. And
sure,
we didn't realize it, of course.
Yeah.
Anybody getting hit and raked over the hood with that thing would have been
disemboweled and
right.
And neutered.
But we didn't think of those things in those days.
Yeah.
Really.
Yeah.
We had no idea.
Well, you never thought of your car being involved in a crash.
That's right.
It was unspeakable.
That's right.
that's... Of course, we did the same ornament, and if I recall correctly, we put it on the rear deck. And with the words Continental. The lettering for the Continental was done by a young lad from Art Center who was working as a modeler with us. His name was Charlie Russell.
Two S's and two L's.
Right. Charlie Russell. That's about all I recall.
Was he working as a summer internship or?
At that time, we hired him permanently, and I think we hired him right out of art school. In fact, it was probably the first batch coming out of any type of automotive school.
Really?
Right.
First year that Art Center design. School was in...
I don't even know if they were in full swing or not, but then, you know. But I believe he came from that area, which was quite a few years later. As I recall, he worked for Sundberg Ferrer.
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh.
Industrial designers out on Telegraph and...
known as the slave laborers of the business, I understand.
Right, yeah. And I understood that he ran their wood shop out there.
Mm-hmm.
Right. He's quite a talented person.
Was he?
Yeah, right.
You're talking about that distinctive Continental script that... Or are you talking about the block lettering?
The block lettering on the rear deck.
Yeah.
He did. The Continental script, I think Johnny did that.
Did he really?
Yeah, I think Johnny Reinhardt did that.
Around the rear wheel housing?
Around the rear wheel housing was the block script. But you were saying the Continental script on the side.
That was done by Reinhardt.
I think it was done by Johnny Reinhardt.
Yeah.
If I remember correctly.
That's good to know.
All right.
And you did the ornament.
Right.
Yeah.
Let's see, what other great things can we say about that?
Well, back to William Clay Ford. He was the most enthusiastic and knowledgeable pupil, was he not? I mean,
yes.
He was probably the perfect boss in that respect. He was willing to listen to the veterans.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't want to pretend that he knew everything. And he really needed help, obviously.
Right.
From everybody. And he was a nice guy to boot, so quite a perfect combination. Must have been fun to work for him.
It was. It was a very... As Harley Comp said when he first made the statement that we were to tutor Bill, he said, you'll never get another chance like this in the world.
Right. Yeah.
And he was right.
Yeah.
To work with such a nice person, really. Really. Unassuming guy.
Yeah.
Really a terrific guy. Not because he was a boss, but he really is.
You're talking about William
Clay Ford. Right, yeah.
What kind of person was Harley Kopp? Tell us about him. He seemed to be some sort of a mystery figure. Especially
you can't get an interview from him, can you?
Well, I haven't tried, but I think
Yeah, you should try it.
Yeah.
Harley at that time was a graduate of the Ford Trade School.
Mm-hmm.
Evidently, he was, from what I recall or what Little said about his background, I don't think he came from a wealthy family, but he was a real pusher.
Really?
And not a bad pusher, in my
opinion,
but just a very enthusiastic young engineer that was quite knowledgeable and wasn't afraid to let anybody know that he was. I liked him.
Mm-hmm.
And I still like the guy, no matter what he did.
Yeah.
The three of them.
Of course, you must admit, I suspect that, well, no one likes a, quote, traitor, unquote. What he did had to be said and done, did it not, in terms of the Pinto?
Oh, I'm sure Harley told the truth.
Yeah, well, that's okay.
Right, I'm sure he told the truth. I don't think that he fabricated anything that wasn't true.
That's what I meant.
But
some things are better unsaid, right?
I'll accept it.
Right. If you know too much, be quiet. Who really cares? Except the government.
Yeah. Well, in this case, this family was suing the company.
Yeah.
For unfortunate deaths. But that really isn't germane to what we're talking about.
Yeah.
The Continental, it was fun to work there. You had John Reinhart was fun to work with. Bill Ford, Harley Cobb. It was kind of a companionable, gung-ho group.
It was.
Yeah.
We could have taken over all of Ford Motor Company at that time.
Right.
Yeah. We thought we were that good.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
A latter-day generation of whiz kids.
Right. The Continental established, in my opinion, the prestige car back to Ford Motor Company.
Yeah, which they didn't have.
Which they did not have. They had lost Cadillac. Mm-hmm. The only thing bad about the entire operation is that Bill hired Doug McClure.
On his own?
I believe he did. I think he went to school with Doug McClure or something like that.
At Yale or somewhere?
I believe that, and you know, you better check that out because this is only my assumption, and I think I got that from Harley.
Who was Doug McClure?
He was supposed to be our PR man.
Okay.
And do you remember the baloney that they put out that if, to buy a Continental, as they started to ballyhoo the Continental as we finished it, do you remember that you had to have a pedigree to buy it? It would only be sold to certain elite people in the particular town, so on and so forth.
I forgot that. Was that
real snob?
Was that part of the advertisements?
Well, it was part of
the
preaching that Doug McClure was doing. And he was giving speeches, I guess, all around the country.
What a kiss of death for a new album.
Yeah, I thought it was just terrible.
Plus, they put a $10,000 price tag.
Yeah, which was a lot of money in those days. Now we pay $10,000
for $10,000.
An Escort.
Right.
You know, little did we know. Mm-hmm. But
how long did that go on? Business about a pedigree.
It went on for quite some time. I think it was right at the introduction of the vehicle. In fact, I think I was standing.
Okay.
I forget where in the hell I was. I couldn't believe that Bill would allow this to go on.
Mm-hmm. He's very democratic, and nothing you need to think about him.
So I don't know if it was my ears that were hearing hunger, but that was the most shocking thing I ever heard in my life.
This was at the presentation, or the introduction?
The introduction.
I don't think that went on very long, because I don't know.
That's good. I'm glad nobody remembers.
Somebody must have grabbed a hold of McClure and said, forget that.
Right.
Did he stay on in PR, McClure?
I don't recall when he left, because I think he stayed on all the way to the time that we moved into the new building down on Oakwood there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the Continental Mark II building, which is now body and assembly building.
Right.
You know, the entire thing was built to produce a Continental.
Yeah, beautiful.
Test track behind it. Bill had a beautiful office right next to Johnny's office.
Mm-hmm.
We had a nice balcony around our studio.
Those
we're
going to
do the next generation. We're going to do the Mark III. Then we're going to do a four-door. I have that all in my notes someplace.
We'll pick that up another time.
Yeah. But that was really nice.
Well, it seemed like the last adventurous time at Ford. The Edsel wasn't much fun. It was probably a failure from the beginning.
Okay.
Mustang, a decade later, was fun, but there was never quite an episode like the Continental where you had a grandson coming up with a whole new division, a whole new concept, but an elaboration of the concept, taking the established product and making something new out of it.
And the challenge was to put the prestige
that particular vehicle.
Back in the line, yeah.
And by God, we did.
Yes.
Really, we did. And I think that all the other Lincolns thereafter, or Continentals thereafter, have been nurtured from that particular design.
Copy.
Right.
Yeah. How was it mechanically? That wasn't your end of the business, but do you remember what, were there some goofs?
Not that I recall.
Was it fairly sound mechanically?
Right.
Buick
it was awfully heavy. That was one of the complaints. I guess Harley over-designed it being too cautious.
Yeah,
or Gordon Buick over-designed it.
Somebody made it too heavy.
Then we still had rust problems with that, you know. And there weren't any mechanical things that I was aware of, you know.
Yeah.
Of course, you know, I live in a very cloistered area, really.
It was beautifully styled. It was crisp and clean. I think one of the classic
Forge Day.
Of that area, yeah.
Forge Day, it was a classic, unique-looking vehicle that I feel as though we achieved our task.
Yeah.
And to revert back to the contest for the original design of it, really, it didn't just so happen that our design won the contest. It was voted upon by several people in the company. They came in and they had a secret ballot. And
it was in the styling showroom.
It was in the gymnasium, which was our studio.
Up in the old trade school.
Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
In the trade school area. And we did win our own design contest.
Did you? Was it
I'm
close?
Sure other people thought it was something else, but. As I recall, it wasn't even close.
Yeah.
It wasn't even close. So, and I think that Bill is democratic enough, Harley certainly was, that if another design would have been chosen, we would have worked it out.
Mm-hmm.
But it wasn't. Ours was definitely chosen.
And rightly so. Who else contributed design proposals of that era?
As I recall, there were five, and I would have to look it up.
You mean the divisions were given a hack at it?
Oh, I don't recall if Walker or it was Walker's studio that did it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't believe that Joe Orris or Elwood Engel sent one over.
Mm-hmm.
But one of the contributors, I believe, and maybe George would have that, George Havlin would have it, or Johnny Reinhart would have all the names. But I think we had Brooke Stevens.
Really?
And that's the one that I was trying to think of.
Mm-hmm. Right.
He was either Milwaukee or Chicago.
Milwaukee, yeah. Right. Still there.
Grissinger and his
partner,
whoever he was, that was a definite group.
They were independents by this time.
They had their own design business at that time. He wasn't working for Ford Motor Company at that time. I'd have to revert to John. But that did pop into my mind.
But your design was a clear-cut winner.
Yes. Our design, our group.
Yes.
On our own grids. No, they were, there should be some photographic evidence of that entire show because it was all photographed.
Love to see it.
It would really be interesting to see that.
When was it held, about mid-'53?
It had to be early 53.
Yeah, right. You had a tight deadline.
Very
early.
Right. Very tight. Might have to look it up in my notes. At that time, I did have a diary.
Oh, great. Still got it?
I still have it. All I have to do is find it.
Oh, yeah.
I know I have it.
Find it. That'd be fabulous.
And Harley Kopp was the one that suggested that I start a diary.
Sort of a journal, really.
Right.
Yeah.
And he was right.
Yeah.
There's days that I didn't put anything in it, but we were just so darn busy working 12 and 16 hours a day.
Incredible.
It was incredible.
Do you have a deadline at this point? Like mid 54 or late?
I don't recall. I really don't.
Yeah.
You know, it was one of those muddle areas where we were just balls out to go, you know, with no rhyme or reason at the time, and they must have told us at the time, but when you're working that hard, you really, your memory's fuzzier than ever.
Right.
Really. Because you really don't have time to even sit down and think.
Were there any compromises in the design that you were unhappy with, or were, did it pretty much come out as you and Beamish and Reinhardt wanted it? Yeah, you can talk.
Really, I thought the wheelbase was a little bit long, but the interior package was fairly good.
Uh-huh. Who worked on that? All of you?
No, once we finished the exterior, we went right into the interior.
Mm-hmm.
We did the instrument panel.
Yeah.
The seats, the trim, the design, you know, it was just part of the process. Oh, also, we built a, to sell a vehicle to management, where the rest of Ford Motor Company management. We built a, I believe it was the first inside-outside buck.
Oh, really?
And when you're familiar with the inside-outside buck?
No, I'm not familiar with the buck.
No. Well, I believe it was one of the first, and I may be wrong. Maybe Charlie can correct me. Charlie Stobar.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
But we laid up the fiberglass exterior of the vehicle. And then we designed the interior parts on the interior of the vehicle, casted those and put them together.
Ooh.
Had the doors hinged so they get in the vehicle so that it felt like a engineering prototype, only it was out of fiberglass.
Large.
Sitting on a shaft.
This was an early use of fiberglass too, wasn't it?
Yes, it was.
Just come into general usage in 53 and...
Oh, I think other industries were using
it. But not in the automobile industry.
Not too much, right.
What was his advantage over plaster, say?
It's lighter.
Lighter?
Right.
More malleable? Malleable, but I mean more attuned to curves and
plane. No, not really. It was just lighter.
Lighter.
Okay. And it simulated the somewhat the sheet metal part, really.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You could bend it a bit.
Oh yeah, you can bend it a bit, and we could never lay it up thin enough to make cheap metal out of it, you know. But it was closer to the finished product.
Yeah, certainly plaster was very uncomfortable to work with, wasn't it?
Oh, it's hell.
Yeah. I would think.
Of course, it was built over a frame, and the wood underneath it was probably as heavy as the plaster underneath it.
When you say inside-outside buck, this was, in other words, instead of making two bucks, you made one buck.
Yeah, we made one buck so that it served the interior buck also, because you could put the instrument panel in it, the seats in it, the upholstery in it.
Great.
You could put in the side glass. You know, it wasn't operable, but at least it was there.
Mm-hmm.
You know. So it simulated an engineering prototype that would have come probably a year and a half or 2 years later.
Mm-hmm. So that was an innovation, certainly.
We thought it was at the time, right.
What had they done before? Made the two and then somehow welded them together, or?
No, usually they made the interior buck separate.
Yeah, I know.
It was on a roll-up, and they never
would
get the two together until engineering started to get sheet metal. And then when they got sheet metal, then you could see what your interior looked like. You put the instrument panel in the body and start to build up the interior that way.
Right.
But they were always done in bucks, which fits the drawing, so it'll fit the vehicle. Only it came much later.
Has this dual or inner and outer buck principle been maintained in the industry? Do you do it now still?
Yes, we still do it now.
Do you? You still do the other way too, don't you?
Oh yes.
The separate ones.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. When a model is finalized for I would say finalized. Mm-hmm. Then often they'll go and make an interior, exterior buck. Mm-hmm. But with the company cutting down, you're getting less and less of that. We simply don't have the manpower to do it anymore. So that perhaps would be going out the window again. It's a matter of economics.
Mm-hmm.
Really. A little more expensive to do it, but it's much more effective.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yes. Very striking to it.
Yeah. Where should we go from here?
Well, on the whole, the Continental experience was an exciting one for you.
Absolutely.
It was, I guess, pretty much your first big assignment, was it not?
Yes.
The company.
Mm-hmm.
Because you'd been working with the Special Products Division, and then you went along with the Continental Division. What?
Well, the Special Products turned into.
That's what I mean, yeah. Special Products Division, after the Continental moved into its own area,
right,
became the rubric for the Edsel, the burgeoning Edsel at that time.
Say that again, Dave.
Well, it seemed to me that after the Continental assumed its own identity,
yeah, right,
that the Special Products Division then brought forth the Edsel, or at least.
No, we didn't do the Edsel.
I know you didn't do it, but
no.
But they used that title on the pre-Edsel of...
They did?
Yeah.
No kidding.
Because I worked with it briefly.
You're right.
Special Products Division in the summer of 1956. And they used that, and we were in the old trade school. They sort of moved in when you vacated.
Is that right?
You went down to your new
Roy office. Brown?
Roy Brown, yeah.
Roy Brown went out to the...
To the trade school.
You're kidding.
Right. I was there in the
I didn't realize
midsummer of 1956. You guys had moved into your plush new building, and the e-car division, they called it also internally.
I'll be daring.
Became the Special Products Division, and they brought forth the answer.
I thought that was done over here in our new design building.
Well, the design of it was, but the administrative that Crafty Dick Crafty and Emmett Judge and
I didn't know that.
Yeah, we were all over in the old place. They just moved in and you guys moved out.
I'll be darned. Well, see, I was so busy doing
what I was down in Allen Park in that plush new building.
Oh, we were as happy as bugs in a row.
Well, what happened? The bubble burst. Eventually. What was the problem? Acceptance? Was there a problem there?
At that time, I believe it was public acceptance, really.
It just didn't materialize in any great numbers.
Not
enough pedigrees.
No. Not enough pedigrees to go around.
And not enough dollar bills.
All right. So, because at that time, as I remember reading through my notes,
mm-hmm,
I was working on a four-door version of the Continental Mark II.
Really? It was that far along?
Right. And
did you have an engineering package and everything, or were you doing just the concept?
I think we were just doing the concept. I don't think we had an engineering package per se.
Uh-huh.
I was doing my own package.
Right. As you were,
right,
as
we were developing.
You were increasingly doing in that era.
Right.
You were beginning to break away from the engineering.
Well, we do the whole, you know, we do get a package from engineering.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And then we negotiate.
Right. Right. Yeah. Uh-huh. You're getting more.
Right.
More power. Yeah.
So, I do recall Johnny stopping the project.
It's Reinhardt. Yeah.
Johnny Reinhardt, because we ran out of money.
Was that it? Just like that.
And about that time, either Johnny or Harley or Bill or whoever it was,
mm-hmm,
had presented to Ford Division our retractable hardtop.
Really?
And I believe I believe we sold them the rights or the patents or what to it. And we went over with the project to the new Ford building and put it on a 57 Ford, if I remember right.
First year?
First year. So we had to be there in 55 or 56.
You were there, yeah.
Right.
You were still there in the summer of 56 when I came and went.
Right.
Yeah.
So Continental Division stayed together for another year.
Did they?
So what was touted was that Bill went to Mama.
Yes.
And Mama coughed up the dough.
Mrs. Eleanor Ford.
Right.
For another year, a continuation of the...
Continuation of the Continental Division.
Yeah.
And
Henry and Ernie Breach were adamant against it, weren't they? They
right.
decided it was wasn't going to go.
That's right.
Yeah. Bestie Breach.
I think we were torpedoed.
I think we were.
Politics.
Yes.
Right.
And I guess it was all based on that $10,000 figure. Someone that convinced Breach, is it not your recollection, someone that convinced Breach that nobody would buy a car at $10,000.
Right. I guess we were, with Doug selling them with that type of attitude, I'm sure that was our demise. I really can't believe it. I think that's what did us in. But
old school ties will do you every time.
Right? Every time. So.
Well, it was very sad, obviously. All of you, I'm sure, were deeply disappointed when you found out.
Oh, Lord, yeah.
You had been torpedoed.
Right. But it was... We had to swallow our pride and
move on,
and they at least they took us in over at the design establishment.
They welcomed back the prodigal son.
They didn't welcome us back.
Oh, really? The atmosphere
really
was
black marked. You know.
Oh, really?
Failures. I think it's really, you know.
Why? Because it failed? It didn't fail.
It didn't fail, but we were another regime coming into. We weren't too well liked.
So that meant that you and Reinhardt and Kopp.
Bob Thomas
Ross.
Kopp went to engineering.
Engineering, yeah, he could do that. And so did Burek, I think.
And Burek did too.
But you guys were
pariahs. Oh, yeah. Right. And I think that's. They held that over my head for years and years.
You mean in terms of.
Promotions
and assignments
right.
and so
yeah.
forth.
Right.
It was disastrous for Reinhardt. He.
Right.
Really.
I wish Bill would have watched us a little bit better, but he's completely oblivious. You know, because we really did take a lick.
Well, I guess he was deeply disappointed too, was he not?
Yeah.
And I think disheartened by the whole thing that.
Yeah, he lost interest.
But all he could say was, "Gee, fellas, I'm sorry. I wish I could.
Right.
I wish you could have gone."
But the thing is that we really got whipped for being part of that team.
Oh, bad, yeah.
Yeah.
It took years to live that down.
Right. Well, it's not lived down yet. You know, mm-hmm. You still got that type of thing going on.
Mm-hmm.
It's too bad.
But you persevered. Reinhardt went on to U.S. Steel, I think.
Yes.
And was seduced.
He was fortunate.
Yeah.
I also think Bill helped him.
I think you're right. Yeah.
And I think he did. I think Johnny will even admit that himself.
Yeah. So.
But the rest of us had to fend for ourselves. It was rough.
How about Beamish?
He survived.
Was that his name, Beamish?
Yeah.
How do you
Beamish
mean
was fired by McGuire. McGuire at
Bill
that
McGuire
time.
Bill McGuire fired him?
Yeah.
Ford, head of Ford Studio?
He was at the Lincoln Studio then, I think.
Oh, he was head of the Lincoln Studio.
I believe.
And
Bob McGuire.
Bob McGuire, I'm sorry.
Yeah, not Bill. Bob McGuire.
He didn't like Beamish, or he didn't think he was necessary.
Evidently, Beamish and McGuire worked at General Motors in their younger days.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And there was a slight cutback. I remember somehow, and I don't remember what year it was. I'd have to go back in my notes. But Beamish got fired.
Mm.
And Beamish ended up over at Chrysler.
Huh?
So he was there for the rest of his tenure in the business.
Is he retired now?
Yeah, he's retired now. Yeah.
Still around?
But he really got jacked around. Yeah. You know, that was bad.
Is he still around?
Fred, yes, he's still alive. Someplace in Arizona.
Arizona. Well,
I'll try
Arizona.
To see you again. Another time. Can we go now? Can
I go right now? Yes. Freaking for the snow comes
down. Right. No, that was very embarrassing.
But you persevered and obviously went on to many other assignments. What was your first 56 assignment, and how did it come about, and how did it go?
The first assignment, I was assigned to Joe Orris's area. No, it was, at that time, it was Frank Hershey.
Another interesting character.
Yeah, he came from General Motors. Mm-hmm. Somehow he got into Ford Motor Company.
He was head of the Ford studio then?
I think he was. And then, somehow I got put over with Bill Boyer and Joe Orris. Now, wait a minute. I'll have to go back before that.
This is the pre-production studio, is
it? Right. It's a pre-production studio. Let me look at my own list here. Maybe it'll trigger something. Okay, it was still a corporate project studio. That's right. The corporate project studio, as I remember right at that time. What I recall is doing a new Falcon.
Really? The very first one?
The very first one. The one that looks like a little ocarina.
Yeah.
It's very round. In fact, it's very apropos to today's vehicles.
Yes, right. Who was doing that?
Bill Boyer and I did that.
Did you really?
In the very studio at the end of the building that was once the truck studio. Mm-hmm. And
so this is the new design center, right?
Yeah, that was the new design center at the time. Mm-hmm. They had evidently just moved in. Mm-hmm. You know. And we had moved in under duress.
Yeah, that lovely Continental studio became the Edsel division for a time. Continental building.
I don't remember them taking over. They did take over the old building.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
They knocked out our balcony and they divided everything off.
Turned into an assembly
line. They ruined
line.
That studio.
Oh,
just terrible. It would have been a showplace for Ford Motor Company.
Mm-hmm.
And it would have kept Lincoln's image. We were doing all the right things. We just couldn't get anyone else in the company to agree with it.
And the public didn't respond properly.
No, Bill and I did the Falcon, but I'm trying to recall really what the hell we did that. It was some other vehicle that wasn't selling worth a damn. But McGuire at the time was the, that's right, he was the exec designer of that studio. We were working for Joe Orris at that time.
Who was head of Ford Division.
Who was head of the Ford studio.
Yeah, right.
And I remember McGuire saying that the sketch that I had done had the two parallel lines on the side.
Mm-hmm.
And his comment to me at the time was, what the hell are you doing, putting a railroad track on the side of a vehicle? We'll never do that. And that's the design that they bought.
Who said this?
Bob McGuire.
Oh, really?
Who was the boss of
the
studio.
In the competition, that came up first.
Said, oh, we'll never do that. By God, we did.
Okay.
That was the design of the vehicle. It was a lot of fun. Then from there,
we were there for a number of years. What other projects do you recall from that pre-production studio?
As I recall, this is where Stu Fry, we switched over, and at that time, they had hired Bus Grissinger from the outside, from his own design business.
Back in, huh?
He came back in through the auspices of Bill Ford being a contributor to the Continental Mark II.
Mm-hmm.
He got a foothold in there. Bourdonnais liked him. It wasn't Bourdonnais at that time. He came in under George.
Right, George Walker.
George Walker.
Yeah.
And Stu Fry at that time was a layout man.
Was he?
And I really can't recall. I think he came over from Continental Mark II with us too.
Really? Stuart Fry.
Stu Fry.
Don Fry's
brother.
Younger.
Right. Who is now a VP of Ford Motor Company. He's our.
Yeah, what does he do?
Hell, he's our vice president, Church of North American.
Yes, that's right.
Engineering.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. He's got it all.
Mm-hmm.
Stu Fry, Busker Singer, and Al Mueller.
Oh, yeah.
And I were in there.
Mm-hmm.
And we did feasibility charts.
Mm-hmm.
Which we're in the process of doing the same thing today, in the business of doing it.
Right. That was a very early application of that.
Of that, where we had, I think we called it Bay 139. We had the entire wall from floor to ceiling covered with charts of interchangeability charts of one body floor pan going into the Ford, Mercury, and Lincoln line.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and the same thing that we do today, sharing components.
Right.
But that was the early on effort of making the company familiar with it.
Mm-hmm.
I do recall that. Of course, Stu went on to greater degree of things. So did everybody else. But
that's Charlie's.
I just stuck
state.
Right at the bottom.
That's Charlie's Band of State where he was best.
Well, I don't know if I'm honest or not, but I got stuck there. Well, I guess water seeks its own level, right?
I you're not a politician, I understand.
Yeah, obviously.
Was that a good group?
Actually, I haven't worked with a bad group in Ford Motor Company.
Well, that's
yet.
Great. That's great to hear.
Really, I haven't, really. I've worked there for some bad people.
But not a bad group.
No, not a bad group.
What was your métier at those times? What was your strong point? What were you doing in terms of technical? Problem.
Sketching new design ideas.
Mm-hmm.
Doing full-size renderings, converting the full-size rendering into a full-size model.
Mm-hmm.
Very much what we do today.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It hasn't changed.
Yeah.
We're still go through the same process.
Mm-hmm.
And from the design off of paper into a three-dimensional model,
mm-hmm.
this is all under our control.
The whole
until
thing.
It's finished, right. And from there, we scan it. Or draw it up. In those days, they took all points, drew it up, and released it
mm-hmm.
to engineering. Then engineering does their feasibility on the vehicle.
Mm-hmm.
Any changes, they come back, we work with them, and that's the way a car is born,
uh-huh.
or a vehicle is born.
A vehicle is born.
Mm.
Well, you're getting recognition. You become a head stylist in late 1961.
All those names are just name changes, Dave.
Really? They're not. They're just window dressing.
They're window dressing. Really? Yeah.
Well, you got a little more money, perhaps.
Oh yeah, I
raise
say that
salary grade.
That. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Probably went up with the cost of living as it went up, Dave.
Normally it might have.
Right.
They were great for passing around titles. It sounded nice ring to them.
Right. The only thing I meant was that at that time I had six designers working for me.
Mm-hmm.
Today we have the same position. I've got two designers.
Cut your way back.
He cut his way back.
What about the Walker exit? You were there at the time.
That was embarrassing.
How did that happen?
From the story that we get at our level,
mm-hmm.
you know. Walker was trying to,
evidently he could see the writing on the wall. Jean Bourdonnais was in very tight with the Ford family.
Especially Egypt, too.
Right. And Walker wanted to put one of his men in there.
Specifically?
Either Joe Orris.
Joe Orris, yeah.
Or Elwood Ingalls.
Yeah, yeah, one of the other.
One of the other. And
this one of this would be his hand-picked successor.
Right. And there was this political thing going on between Jean Bourdonnais and... it was childish.
Between me and who? Jean Bourdonnais and me?
Jean Bourdonnais and Joe Orris and Elwood Ingalls.
Oh, yeah.
You would see them, you know, do these very childish things.
Yeah.
These are our leaders. And you could see them doing these childish things.
Yeah.
Trying to ruin the other guy's model. It's just like a bunch of children. You wouldn't believe it. One guy tried to drop the door on a, as it was going into the elevator to the showroom. And, you know, obvious things that you wouldn't believe that grown people can go through things like that. I guess when it was announced that Jean Bourdonnais was going to be the vice president of the Church of Staten, Walker evidently had